This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Special guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading Chicago. Bob joins us in a moment. First, USDA economist Megan Schweitzer with latest food price forecast.
Prices for food at home or groceries are predicted to increase by 1% in 2024. And that's compared to a 5% increase in prices that we saw for groceries in 2023. Prices for food away from home or restaurants are predicted to increase by 4.3% in 2024. And that's down a bit from the 7.1% increase in food away from home prices we saw in 2023. And then finally, for all food, prices are predicted to increase by 2.2% in 2024. And last year in 2023, prices for all food had increased by 5.8%.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. And Bob, as I look across the country, we've seen really good weather. And when I say good weather, weather that's conducive to growing crops. Now, some areas a little more wetter than normal, others drier. But again, just looking big picture, and is that really what traders do when they show up on Monday, though we don't trade in pits anymore, but is that still what drives the market these days?
Yeah, absolutely. So just a quick anecdote, when I was down on the floor of the exchange for the time I was down there, it was really interesting to see the traders vacate their spot, their favorite trading spot that they had dibs on in their trading pit, in the grains and oilseeds and such, and even in the cattle markets, to peel out and go into the break room for the members and watch TV. And what were they watching? They weren't watching talk shows. They weren't watching talking head shows. They were watching the weatherman, and they had their best and favorite weatherman that they would literally carve out, have a little alarm on, you know, a little alarm go on or whatever the deal was, so that they would, you know, hit this guy every day or this woman every day in terms of getting their feedback or their analysis of what's going on with the weather forecast. So yeah, that hasn't changed. And that was back in the, I hate to say it, but the mid-90s. So going on 30 years, and it really hasn't changed and it can't change. I mean, obviously Mother Nature at the end of the day dictates how productive your crop is going to be, no matter how much pesticide, herbicide, fertilizer you throw on the thing. You know, really, at the end of the day, you need a conducive climate in order to do that, and it comes down to Mother Nature. So, getting away from that anecdote, yeah, over the weekend, good rains. I can attest to that, especially here in Illinois. There was some good precip yesterday, pretty much all day, and it wasn't really like a dousing. It wasn't just an all-out torrent, at least where I was. It was just a nice, steady, I guess if you like outdoor sports, more of an annoying rain that just kept going on throughout all the day with some breaks in there. And then if I look at my window today, it's still kind of drizzling a little bit, and I think it's supposed to wrap up over the next few hours. So, yeah, it's just my perch. It's just my perspective. But I also know other areas had pretty much the similar type of experience over the weekend. So net-net, the adverse weather, relatively adverse in terms of hotter and drier that had been anticipated, say, 7 to 10 days ago, did not come into fruition exactly. And as a matter of fact, in terms of the weather going forward, there's moderating temperatures for the past the 7-day period, okay? And that's going to be looking good for the crop, and especially for soybeans, because August is really the critical month for soybean yield determination. So if we can hit into August, and we are July 29th, just a few days away from the 1st of August, that's a good way to start, okay? So the market basically took all the information and discounted it. And that's why soybeans today, in my opinion, we're down about 7 or 8 cents. Wheat was up about a half dozen. Corn was up a couple of cents. And they did close off their lows. So the low today in November soybeans was 10.18 a bushel. We went out somewhere closer to 10.40. So we did get back 22 cents a bushel in that contract and probably ended up at the top end of the range for the day. So we'll see how this plays out over the next few days. But net-net, the market pretty much discounted the weather over the weekend, and we'll see what happens from here. So then we go back to just kind of taking a peek at what are some of the driving fundamentals. And for soybeans in particular, I guess, because we ended with that there, We got the weather, obviously, we talked about that. We've also got China meal stocks. They're the highest in 5 years, kind of indicates that maybe they've got enough for at least a short period of time. So maybe meal demand vis-a-vis soybean demand doesn't really kick in for us as much as we would like, although we haven't been the main benefactor of China's business anyway. Also, we had that regulatory decision, or a court decision, I should say, end of last week, which vacated some of the EPA's blanket denial in 2022 for that small refinery exemptions. So if you're not plugged into that, basically small refineries, energy refineries, crude oil refineries are able to at times apply for exemptions to the renewable fuel mandates. And basically my interpretation is that the EPA said, no, you know, you guys are going to have to add it in anyway and go ahead and buy it anyway. We're not giving you an exemption, but that was overruled. So that kind of takes away a bit of a demand base. And I think that helped push down bean oil futures end of last week and also maybe still kind of working its way through the soybeans also. So we'll see how that plays out over time. They did kick it back to the EPA. The court did, that is. And we'll see, you know, if there's any changes down the road, if they want to tweak the language and see if that, you know, impacts that particular potential demand base. And beyond soybeans, we've got the corn contract. Again, I don't want to beat the weather down, but that's been relatively friendly. The bigger takeaway is that there doesn't seem to be as much a concern that crop conditions are going to start to flow lower in that good excellent category, and we will get another data point this afternoon in terms of the crop condition indices, so we'll see how that plays out. Export demand, ethanol still remains strong, so I guess that's one favorable thing. And then in terms of wheat, I think the bigger picture there had been that there was some pressure from corn and soybeans helping to push it lower. But like I mentioned, today it was up 6-7 cents. We'll see how that plays out over the short term here. Also, if you look around the world, Canada, the U.S. Ag Attaché estimated that wheat production to about 35.5 million metric tons. That's up 0.5 million metric tons from their previous estimate, or from the USDA's estimate, I should say. And then Silvicon raised their Russian production to 84.7 million metric tons, up from 84.1 in their previous forecast. So those are some of the data points that became, you know, that I tend to look at on a week-to-week basis. Obviously, we got to keep our eyes on what's going on with the weather. But net-net, I think the bigger picture is, you know, how do you really expect any kind of sustaining gains in any of those big three markets that we talked about, corn, wheat, or soybeans, when we've got pretty burdensome supplies? We've got ample supply in terms of potential ending stocks here in the United States and also in the world. So there's really going to have to be something that comes along that really reduces the expectations in terms of production, or reduces the expectations in terms of the next planting season, in order for this market to really, I think, have any true legs. And just to finish that thought, I know we've been doing this for quite some time. I look at seasonal tendencies, and being that we're just a couple of few days away from the beginning of August, I thought I'd pull up the tendencies. Now, these aren't written in stone. There's always going to be those anomaly years where things do exactly the opposite, regardless of how far back you go in terms of price direction during a particular time period. But I'm looking at the corn, wheat, and soybean tendencies for the month of August. And for corn, it's just my opinion, straight down. And then for wheat, it's similar, pretty much straight down. That's a soft red winter wheat, straight down. And then for Kansas hard red winter wheat, straight down. And then for soybeans, this one's a little different. Depends on the time period you're looking at. There's been some years where it's been down, but there's been more recent years where it's actually been steady to higher. So maybe we get some kind of weather scare during, like what I mentioned was the prime time for soybean production in August. So that one is a little different than corn and wheat. We'll see if that plays out. And I know we haven't mentioned yet, but for cattle, it also tends to be a challenging month, being that it tends to move lower quite a bit. And then also for feeder cattle, you know, a little more choppy, but generally the direction is lower. So a little perspective there, a little context, and those are some of the things that I'm looking at lately.
Okay, just 2 minutes left, but let's talk cattle. What are you watching there?
Well, cattle, I'm just kind of watching the cash market, see where things end up in terms of, you know, the packers versus the feedlots. And last week, feedlots won a little bit. I think trading the north was up $2 week on week. Trading the south was up $2 week on week. Box beef prices closed higher. I think choice were up about $1.30 and select were up around $2.30 or so. So that's definitely heading in the direction, moving away from some of the fundamentals where cash is trading and looking at, say, the commitment to trades report and see if those who are the big spec money want to continue to get into the market. And it certainly seems like recently the answer is yes. So you got that little buying momentum, buying power that keeps coming into the marketplace. And what I mean is, as of the end of July 23rd, that is, the commitment to trades report showed that the managed money traders were net long about almost 62,000 contracts, and that was an increase of about 3,600 contracts. So even at these lofty prices that we're seeing, okay, the market is, or the spec money is still wanting to get in there. So hopefully that's a good sign over the short term if you're looking for this market to move higher. So we'll see where cash ends up trading this week and take it from there.
And one final thing that I like to throw this one out at you. I think you've talked about crude. You've talked about cocoa in the past. With about 20 seconds, is there something else you're watching?
Well, I do like cocoa. That's down. Well, like it to the downside. It's down 225 today. The other one I would like to mention is gold. I don't know if we mentioned this last week or not, but I'm really having a hard time thinking if the market rallied as strong as it did in part because of where inflation was, if inflation starts to slow down, and it looks at this point based on some recent data points that have come out from the economic numbers that inflation on a year-on-year basis is moving slowly down towards that 2%. If we get to that number, can you still justify gold prices up here in the, you know, the mid 2000s? And I don't know. You know, we'll see how that plays out. I'm watching it technically, keeping an eye on that, but I'm kind of leaning towards the downside. We'll see how it plays out.
Bob Mowers with Manduca Trading in Chicago. You can find Bob online at myfuturesadvisor.com. You've got a regular phone too as well if we want to call, right?
Good old-fashioned phone. Number's 312-987-2053. Feel free to give me a ring.
And again, it's myfuturesadvisor.com. Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
In this heat, you're concerned about both the health of your animals and their performance. Strobel Super Shades can reduce the dangerous ground temperatures 30 degrees or more. Strobel Super Shades, the best-built cattle shades in the industry, available in 40 by 40 with 1,600 square feet of shade or 20 by 20, proven to protect your cattle and increase your gains. Go to StrobelShades.com for more. Strobel Shades. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago.
Attention, High Plains landowners. The Sandhill Area Research Association is looking for 50 ply lakes in need of restoration. This project brings free resources to you and includes a per-acre incentive. Playas matter today for our ecosystem and for tomorrow's water supply. To learn more, visit playasworkfortexans.com. Together, we can leave a legacy of water for future generations.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading Chicago Online, MyFuturesAdvisor.com.
Truck owners, want to turn your truck into the ultimate workhorse or off-road beast? The possibilities are endless in making your truck more versatile, more fun, and higher performing. When it comes to equipping your truck, there's only one name you need to know. Rascal Supply. North Highway 87 between 98th and 114th Streets in Lubbock, or call 806-300-8007. For all your truck accessories, Rascal takes your truck to the next level.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Richard Johnson's with the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service on fruit flies.
So we had 7 concurrent quarantines. 3 of them were up in basically the San Francisco Bay Area. Those were Oriental fruit fly quarantines. And 2 out of 3 had some level of agriculture in the quarantine area. And so when you have a quarantine, it restricts what you can do as far as moving your produce. You can't really move produce outside of the quarantine, which inhibits trade quite a bit. The other 4 quarantines were more in the Southern California area, in Los Angeles County, Ventura County, San Bernardino, Riverside County. A lot of, particularly the quarantine that was in the San Bernardino, Riverside County, there were over 6,500 acres of agriculture, and primarily against citrus there. So the timing is such that the growers had to restrict what they could do with their produce. Sometimes you have to ship it for processing rather than for the fresh market, which can be a substantial decrease income for your produce.